This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for October 6, 2005. The group GE Free Maine has issued a call for a ban on the release of genetically engineered trees into the environment. Today, we'll be talking to two longtime activists who've been working on the issue internationally and are coming to Maine next week as part of GE Free Maine's educational campaign. Ann Peterman and Oren Langell are the co-founders and co-directors of the Global Justice Ecology Project. They were among the first activists to raise alarms about the dangers associated with genetic engineering, and they've researched, written, and spoken extensively on the topic. They'll be making several stops in Maine next week talking about GE trees and showing the new film, A Silent Forest, The Growing Threat of Genetically Engineered Trees, narrated by Dr. David Suzuki. We spoke with them by phone earlier today.
Okay, I think, first of all, it's great that you're having me on the show, Amy, and looking forward to being up in Maine next week. Basically, Ann Peterman and I from the Global Justice Ecology Project got involved in the whole, research of what was going on with GE trees in 1999. I actually led a delegation down to Mexico to look into what was going on at that point with some of the militarization that was occurring, how it was affecting the indigenous populations and so on, specifically the Zapatistas of Chiapas, Mexico. And while we were down there, we actually knew that there was a guy by the name of Alfonso Romo from Grupo Pulsar, and Grupo Pulsar was like the biotechnology giant of Mexico, and also that they were going to put in about 300,000, hectares of commercial tree plantations. So putting two and two together, not really wanting to get that involved in GE trees, we started doing some research, and I was down there and didn't really get anywhere with Grupo Pulsar, but the delegation I was on, we went to places in Tabasco and Veracruz, and we ended up interviewing people from Plantasur, which is Plantations Forestal of the South, in the subsidiary of Texas Midland, I believe. And anyway, one of the people we talked to was our overseer, and he was telling us how they already were genetically engineering trees, specifically, I guess, in test plots, seeing how that they were growing, et cetera, and if that was commercially viable. And I came back to the United States with this knowledge and ran into Brian Tokar, who was at that time working on a book called Redesigning Life, The Worldwide Challenge to Genetic Engineering. And Brian then kind of twisted my arm and said, okay, Oren, can you write a chapter in the book on genetically engineered trees? And I said, begrudgingly said yes, and we called it From Native Forest to Frankenforest. And at the time that I was doing that, I had to do all kind of, it was Temple Inland Container, by the way. I'm sorry, I said Texas. It was Temple Inland Container with the people that were involved down in Mexico with Plantations Forestal. And anyway, Brian, like I said, convinced me to write the chapter in the book. I started doing research, and I started kind of going around the world on email, seeing if anybody knew what was going on with genetically engineered trees. I was contacting all kind of different forest groups. I got an email back from one guy over in Europe, and he said, well, congratulations, Oren, you're now one of the handful of people that know anything about genetically engineered trees outside of the industry. So that's kind of how things started. We started doing things. We had a press conference in Boston in the year 2000. We announced a campaign against genetically engineered trees. We've been working internationally trying to make people aware of the issue of genetically engineered trees. We has started our group, Global Justice Ecology Project, has started the Stop GE Trees campaign in the United States, and I'm the coordinator of that, and there's about 13 or 14 different groups in the U.S. and Canada, including our group, Global Justice Ecology Project, GE Free Maine, who's bringing us to Maine, The Sierra Club, Rainforest Action Network, Dogwood Alliance, Valera's Institute up in Canada, Institute for Social Ecologies, Biotechnology Project, Forest Ethics, and the list goes on of who we're working to. And in this nationwide, or actually U.S.-Canada-wide coalition, we're trying to get the ban of genetically engineered trees in the U.S. and Canada. And my co-director here, our co-director, Ann Peterman, is actually working on an international campaign right now. We both are, but she's kind of facilitating the international campaign to have genetically engineered banned throughout the world.
Well, thanks for talking with us, Warren. I know you're going to put Ann on the phone now, and she's going to pick it up from there. And why don't you mention what it is that you're running off to work on, the deadline that you have, so listeners can also be on the watch for that.
Right. Well, Ann and I had the opportunity to be down in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, where one of the largest anti-war protests took place, and also protests against the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. And we took photos and we're documenting what was happening down there. And I'm actually running off right now to send photos to Z Magazine, because Ann and I have photos and a story and article that should appear next month in Z. And I'm on a tremendous deadline, and I've got to run. But, Amy, I thank you for having me on, and also looking forward to seeing many of you in Maine next week.
Great.
And I guess Ann's going to get on soon.
Thank you.
Yep. Orin, hi, I'm on.
So, Ann, Orin said a little bit about how, were you right there when Orin was saying his piece? Did you hear his end of it? Okay. All right. So do you want to pick up with explaining why it is that your groups are opposed to genetically engineered trees? What mobilizes such strong resistance to them?
Sure. You know, a lot of people are familiar with many of the problems with genetically engineered foods. And the thing about genetically engineered trees is the industry is applying much of the technology that they've already been working on with agriculture to also put into trees in, you know, such traits as herbicide resistance, you know, so you can dump as much toxic chemical on the trees as you want and they will continue to grow. Insect resistance, which means that every cell of the tree produces a pesticide, a toxic pesticide, which is toxic not just to insects, but also to the animals that eat the insects and to animals and humans that inhale the pollen from these trees, and so on. So what we're able to do, because there is so much experience and information from the application of these traits in agriculture, is look at the problems that have resulted there and postulate what we believe the problems then will be when talking about the engineering of trees. For example, the canola contamination in Canada, people may have heard about that. There's a farmer, Percy Schmeiser, who was sued by Monsanto Corporation for growing GE canola, and Percy claims that, you know, what happened was his fields were contaminated by their canola that blew off of a neighbor's truck or from a neighbor's field. Anyway, what's happened, because canola is such a prolific pollinator in Canada, is you basically, it's almost impossible now to find non-GMO contaminated canola in Western Canada.
Mm.
So, and that's just a small annual plant. You know, what we're talking about with trees are, you know, beings that can live for decades, if not centuries. And researchers at Duke University in North Carolina did a study recently that found that trees can actually spread their pollen for 1,000 miles or more. So the contamination threat is huge. So when you're talking about insect resistance, you're engineering trees to produce a pesticide that can then kill insects. You can imagine the ecological devastation that would result if that trait was transferred into a native forest. Now, all of a sudden, here's a native forest that can't sustain, you know, these insects and all of the insects that and animals that depend on those insects as food, and so on and so forth. So you've just completely, you know, disrupted the ecosystem of that native forest. Not to mention which, the BT crops have also been found to disrupt soil microorganisms. So not only are they killing the insects that use the plant above ground, they're damaging the fungus and the bacterial community, microbial community in the soil. So you're also, you know, very, very seriously disrupting the soils as well as the above ground ecology.
What kind of studies are done before these things are released?
Well, you know, the problem is we have the people who are assessing the risks are the same people who are the promoters. The U.S. EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, when they were looking at who they wanted to assess the risks of this technology, they chose the Tree Genetic Engineering Research Cooperative in University of Oregon in Corvallis. And, you know, Steve Strauss, who heads up that program, is probably the industry's number one promoter. He's the one who's always quoted in the news. Whenever there's an article promoting genetically engineered trees, invariably it's quotes from Strauss. So, you know, here's this so-called risks. I mean, the risks So here we have the number one promoter of GE trees in the U.S. being assigned the responsibility of assessing the risks. So not surprisingly, he hasn't found out too much.
A slight conflict of interest there.
A little bit of conflict of interest there. Plus which, you know, I mean, if they really wanted to be serious about assessing the risks, they would have to have these trees, first of all, completely contained so that there was no possibility of contamination whatsoever, which would mean growing them in a greenhouse. And then could they really, you know, replicate a forest community? Probably not. But they would have to let these trees grow for decades to find out what is the interaction of those trees with surrounding plant life. What is the interaction of those trees with the soil? How is the soil disrupted? How is the environment disrupted? What are the long-term impacts of that? And they're not going to do that. Industry's not going to wait around for 20, 30, 100 years to get these studies. You know, they're going to do 5 or 10-year studies on these little test plots and then use that to say they know what's going on when, you know, the fact of the matter is they have no idea. They have no clue what the long-term impacts of these trees will be.
One of the concerns about genetically engineered food has been that other farmers nearby don't know necessarily what their neighbors are growing. If somebody's growing something that's genetically engineered and the pollen could contaminate the other farmers' crops, they don't necessarily know about that. What about trees? Is it easier to find out who is growing these test plots and where they're being grown and what they're growing?
No, it's almost impossible to find out where these test plots are. Industry is extremely secretive, and they claim it's because they're afraid that people will go in there and damage the test plots, you know, but they don't want to let anybody know where they are. So, no, landowners nearby don't know. Communities don't know. As I mentioned, you know, the pollen that's produced by trees that have been engineered to resist insects. They're called BT trees, which stands for Bacillus thuringiensis, which is the bacterial toxin that they produce. These trees, the pollen from these trees is quite toxic when it's inhaled. What's been found in the Philippines with BT corn, villages that are living adjacent to, you know, large fields of BT corn, when they inhale that pollen, you know, the whole village gets sick. And it's not until they are removed from the area and go somewhere else that they are then well. And then when they move back to the village, if there's still pollination going on, they get sick again. So, you know, researchers are still looking at that, and physicians are still looking at that to try to understand what's going on there. This has very recently been found out. But the implications for communities that live near plantations of BT trees or test plots of BT trees is quite frightening, and that's one of the number one traits that trees are being engineered for is this insect resistance.
Tell us about what happened with the papaya in Hawaii.
Right, the papaya in Hawaii. This is a concern for in the Northeast apple growers in particular. In Hawaii, genetically engineered papaya was commercialized, so people were actually growing it commercially. And what ended up happening on the Big Island was after a very short period of time, they identified contamination rates of non-GMO and organic papaya groves of about 50%. So, you know, huge contamination rates in a very short period of time from this papaya. So you can imagine if they're talking about putting in orchards of genetically engineered apples, which is one of the fruits that's actively being engineered at this point, you know, the possibility for contamination of local orchards, of non-GMO orchards, is pretty significant, and people should be very concerned about that. And that's one of those things that people definitely need to know if somebody is planning to put in a genetically engineered orchard. But the problem is with pollination, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the state of Maine for Maine to be impacted. If it's in New Hampshire and it blows over the border into Maine, you know, that's why we're talking about national and international bans, because it's not just about what's going on within the borders of a particular state or a particular country. This stuff can travel across borders. It doesn't matter. It's not concerned about borders. Borders don't matter when you're talking about pollen contamination.
So it sounds like there would be the potential not only for an organic farmer's organic status to be ruined so that they could not be growing organic food for a while, say apples, for example, but also what would happen if somebody was growing an heirloom variety that got contaminated? Because Maine, there are some older varieties of apples. Is there any thought to how long it takes before, or is it possible at all to get this out of the system of the trees? Would they just have to be grown someplace else entirely? Is there any knowledge at all about how to eradicate this contamination once it happens?
Once the genie's out of the bottle, there's really no way to put it back in. You know, that's why we're talking about let's stop this before it's commercialized, because, you know, once it's out there, there's no way to call it back. And there's really no place that would be safe, because once the contamination starts, the trees that are contaminated then become new contaminants in a never-ending cycle, you know, and not just with fruit trees, but with poplar trees, you know, native trees. And that's, I think, one of the very great concerns is, for example, poplars are being engineered for insect resistance, for herbicide resistance, and for reduced lignin, lignin being the component in a tree that makes it stand up straight, also protects it from insects, protects it from animal browsing, protects it from disease, but it's also what you have to take out to make paper. So they are talking about reducing the lignin so it's easier and cheaper to make paper. Meanwhile, if that trait gets out into native forests, now we have trees that are less resistant to insects, less resistant to animal browsing, less resistant to disease. And, you know, they continue to contaminate more trees, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, you've really got a mess on your hands. So that's why we're talking about trying to stop this before it starts.
Can you tell us a little bit about the film that's going to be shown as you're doing your speaking tour up here in Maine?
Sure, and I hope people will come out to it. It's pretty exciting, actually. We have the Stop GE Trees campaign. We worked through and with my own organization, Global Justice Ecology Project, and we worked with Rain Dancer Films and Earthlinks to put this film out. They're the ones who really actually produced the film. We acted as consultants. But it's narrated by Dr. David Suzuki of the David Suzuki Foundation and the PBS program, The Nature of Things. It's called A Silent Forest, The Growing Threat, Genetically Engineered Trees. And it's about 44 minutes long, and it's a quite powerful video. Dr. Suzuki really goes through the ABCs of why genetic engineering is a bad idea, and then we get into the very specifics around trees of what the problems are that will be unleashed if genetically engineered trees escape, if the pollen from genetically engineered trees escape into the environment, and, you know, the threats from the test plots themselves and the threats to communities, and kind of goes through the whole thing. So if people are interested in the issue of genetically engineered trees, I highly encourage them to come out and check out the film when we tour the state. If they can't do that, if they're not able to, they can also purchase the video by going to our website. There's a link there to go ahead and purchase the video. And you can actually own it. It's only $25. It's pretty cheap.
We should also mention, Anne, that on your website there are many articles that you've written that go in depth in different directions about genetically engineered trees. Can you mention a few of the different topics if people are interested in going and learning more?
Sure. Well, there's two articles in particular. One is called Genetically Engineered Trees, Myths and Realities, and it goes through all of the things that industry says will be the benefits from genetically engineered trees. And then it counters them one by one. So you can go through and look at every single thing that industry is saying is going to be a benefit and why that's not the case. There's another separate piece on there, which is about the global warming connection with genetically engineered trees. Industry is saying that trees could be engineered to offset carbon emissions and help stop global warming. And there's an article in there that debunks that, explains why that won't work. You know, that the traits that I've been discussing, if those are escape into native forests, what we're talking about is massive forest die-off, which is obviously going to exacerbate global warming. So there's a whole article that talks about that. We talk about the connection to the United Nations, which is promoting genetically engineered trees through various of their programs, the World Bank connection. You know, looking at this issue not just in the U.S. but internationally, what are the implications for communities in Latin America and other places that are being targeted, and so on. And one of the things we didn't talk about that's of concern to people in Maine and other places that may have some kind of GE trees nearby is the patent question. You know, farmers have been sued for violating the patents of companies when their crops are contaminated with GE traits from another crop. The same thing would obviously hold true for trees as well. If someone's trees on their land are contaminated by genetically engineered pollen from a nearby test plot or plantation, or not even nearby, it could be hundreds of miles away. It could be in North Carolina. As I mentioned earlier, this pollen travels 1,000 miles, so a test plot in North Carolina could spread its pollen, theoretically, to poplars in Maine. All of a sudden, somebody's got a bunch of poplars on their land that have been contaminated by this engineered pollen that now legally belong to whatever corporation, Monsanto or International Paper or whoever that was doing the test plot in North Carolina. So it's a huge problem and one that doesn't really have any good solutions, which, as I mentioned, is why we're talking about a commercial ban on the technology nationally and internationally.
In addition to learning more and coming out to see the film and having the opportunity to hear you and Oren speak about this issue and ask questions, what can people be doing? Who are the companies that are involved? Are there any steps that people can be taking to address their concerns with them or in other ways?
Well, you know, industry has been very quiet. It's been very difficult to find out exactly who is doing what, and because the technology changes every year, it's really been hard. You know, the last information that folks in Maine had was that Irving was involved with the Canadian Forest Service doing some research. Now the Canadian Forest Service says they're not doing it anymore because it turned out to be economically unfeasible or whatever. So, you know, it's really hard to say who is doing what, which is why, again, we're talking about not just looking at individual corporations and asking them to not develop the technology, but are actually looking at an actual ban. But one thing that we are doing that people can help with is we're talking about getting companies that would be buying the products from genetically engineered trees, getting them to commit to not selling those products. So, for example, our organization isn't working on that, but some of our partner groups like Rainforest Action Network and Forest Ethics are working on getting, for example, Office Depot and Kinko's and Staples and so on that sell a lot of paper products to commit to not selling products from genetically engineered trees. And in that way, we can undercut the market and make this very expensive technology not economically feasible and try to shut it down that way. So people can plug into those campaigns very easily by contacting RAN and Forest Ethics and helping out with local actions and so on at the different outlets.
And you have a sign-on letter at your website as well?
Yep, there's a sign-on letter to the United Nations on our website. One of our international campaigns is going to the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity and asking for a moratorium on genetically engineered tree technology so that it cannot be commercialized until these questions are answered. That's the best we can do with the United Nations. We want a permanent ban right now. But the best you can do through the United Nations is a moratorium until a study is done, and then perhaps the moratorium can be made permanent. So that's what we're looking at with that. People can sign that letter, which we'll take to Brazil with us next March and present it to the UN, which is when they're having their next Convention on Biological Diversity. And we have this video, which people can purchase. They can show it to their friends, their neighbors, get the word out more. And we also have an action toolkit. It's not quite finished yet, but people can contact us through our website, and we will be happy to send this action toolkit, which will have sample letters to the editor, public service announcements, all kinds of different tools that people can use to get active on the issue in their own community, because we certainly want to empower people and encourage people to do that.
And why don't you give that website?
Sure. Our website, our name is Global Justice Ecology Project, and our website is www.globaljusticeecology.org. So people can go there. They can get all the information about genetically engineered trees, information on ordering the video, request the toolkit, and generally get plugged in. And the more the merrier. We'd love to hear from you.
Great. And we'll give the schedule of the tour in just a moment. Thanks for joining us, Ann Peterman.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. And that was Ann Peterman. Also, the sponsor of the tour is GE Free Maine, a statewide coalition built around the belief that GE Free agriculture systems sustain us all, while genetic engineering sustains only corporate control of the seeds of life and puts at risk the family farms that support Maine's economy. GE Free Maine seeks to create GE Free zones across Maine through a combination of voluntary farmer pledges and town resolutions. They're working to protect all farmers from the liability issues resulting from genetic contamination and to support alternatives to the corporate control of our food supply. The tour stops in our area will be next Wednesday in Wiscasset at the Morris Farms at 6 o'clock in the evening. On Thursday, they'll be making stops in Unity at Unity College at 1 o'clock. The particular contact information for that stop is jhughes@unity.edu. And they'll be stopping later that day in Bar Harbor at the College of the Atlantic at 7. That's on Thursday, October 13th. On Friday, October 14th, they will be stopping at the University of Maine at Orono. Originally, that was scheduled to be at 3 o'clock. That time has been changed to 2 o'clock, and the exact location on the university campus has yet to be announced. But for more information about that, you can email William_Giordano, G-I-O-R-D-A-N-O, at umit.maine.edu. And finally, they will be also stopping in Blue Hill Friday evening, October 14th at 7 at the Blue Hill Town Hall. For more information on any of those stops or to see the statewide tour listing for other stops outside of our area, you can go to the GE Free Maine website, which is gefreemaine.org, email info@gefreemaine, or call 244-0908.
I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet blowing breast, a tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray, a tree that may somewhere a nest of robins in her hair, upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree.
That was Robert Hoyt with Trees. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco. Joel Mann engineered today's program. Andy Buckley does web and technical support. You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactive@maineindymedia.org. Our website is radioactivenews.org, and we are now podcasting. Thanks for listening and acting. Stay tuned for more independent news on your community radio station. And join us again next Thursday at 4 for Radioactive. Thank you.